Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi, it's Lois. If you're looking for a tool to help introduce children to the concepts of blindness and inclusion, then please stay tuned after the interview. Hi there, and welcome to another episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen, and today we are returning to the Job Talk series of interviews, where I talk with people with disabilities involved in mainstream employment. Today, I'm going to be chatting with Nick Smith, who works as a teacher. Nick, welcome back to the podcast. We haven't had you on the show for a while. It's great to have you back with us. How are you today?
Thank you so much, Lois. Great to be here.
Great. Now, you've been on A Different Way of Seeing in a different number of different capacities over the last year or two. But this is going to be the first time that we're going to be talking about your role as a teacher. So I guess I know a little bit more about your story generally, but people won't have the time. Well, I suppose they could just stop listening and go back to the other interviews, but we'd prefer to give them the chance to really just stay with us, listen to this one first, and then go and check out your other episodes. So let's just start as I usually do and say to you, tell us a little bit about generally who is Nick Smith.
Okay. So I am a teacher by passion and profession. It's led me to a whole range of different things, disability awareness, advocacy, entrepreneurship, a range of different roles. But I think at the base or at the core, if you draw a line through all of them, teaching or the skills of teaching would appear in all spheres. And I think it's something that has been part of my life for the whole of my journey. The reason why I say this is I am a person with a disability. I was involved in a car accident when I was 6 months old. As a result of that car accident, I sustained serious head trauma and have cerebral palsy with hemiplegia. For those of you on listening to this podcast who know what that is, you can just sit back and relax now. For those of you who have no idea what I just said, basically, cerebral palsy means brain damaged because a section of my brain was damaged in the car accident. And then hemiplegia is half paralyzed. And so the brain damage on the right-hand side of my brain has affected the left-hand side of my body. So I like to say that I walk with a gangster limp because I'm cool like that. And I have a rogue arm that sometimes does its own thing.
Okay, great. Thank you. And thank you for breaking the kind of the lived experience of what cerebral palsy, hemiplegia actually means, because we have heard it a number of times from different guests.
Okay.
So what then drew you towards teaching as a profession?
So when I was in grade 10, you know, you pick your subjects that you're going to hone in on. And then in grade 11, you start taking a little bit more seriously and then identifying what you want to kind of go into. So from grade 11, grade 12, I was looking at different things. One of them I was seriously considering is marketing and advertising. And then I was also obviously looking at teaching. And when I decided on teaching, my family wasn't at first supportive of that because they said, you know, you are a person with a disability. It's an overt disability, so people can see it. You're going to put yourself in front of children that can probably and will probably tease you. So, you know, are you aware of the situation that you may be creating? And I said, well, you know, yes, I am. And I think it would be good. I enjoy interacting with people. I'm an extrovert. I enjoy teaching things to people. And I feel like I would also be kind of stepping into the advocacy role. You know, if I am teaching children with no disabilities and I'm standing in front of them as a person with a disability, hopefully the next time they come across a disabled person or a person with a disability, they would say, oh, this isn't so different or this isn't so scary because we had a teacher with a disability. I also think that I've almost been training to be a teacher since I was about 6 or 7. Now, that sounds weird, but it's true because I have a younger sister who's 5 years younger than me, and she's got Down syndrome. So from a very early age, her and I were extremely close because I had the lived experience of having a disability, but from a physical perspective. And then she's obviously has a mental disability. So in our family, we often said that we made a perfect team because she was my hands and I was her brain, and we worked together and we were almost inseparable. And so often it came to a situation where, you know, something needed to be explained to Amy, and I had to think of it from different perspectives. If a person without any disability would learn it like this, how can I explain it to Amy? And so my mind kind of learned how to break things down and how to think laterally and how to explain things from a different perspective from a very early age. And I think that has made me, or one of the aspects that's made me a good teacher today.
That's a really interesting perspective, because knowing a little bit about learning theory, I can see that having some huge implications for the way of addressing learning with people of different learning styles. That is an awareness that very often has to be learned at a later age.
Yes.
Okay, so you've developed the interest around the age of 16, 17. That sort of age, you said grade 10, grade 11, but have been doing this through your life generally from a much younger age. Having made that decision then, tell us about the training and the kind of your start in the field of education.
So I went and I'm in Joburg. So I studied a 4-year degree at WITS. It's a bachelor's degree of education. And I majored in the inter-sen phase, which is the intermediate and senior phase. And when doing that, they ask you to hone in or focus on 2 distinct subjects. So you get experience in all different subjects, but you hone your skills on 2. And so I chose biology, which then became, when I was teaching, natural science. And funny enough, I wanted to take drama as my 2nd subject. And my family said no, because, you know, drama isn't as strong a subject as, say, for example, maths. And they said maths will always be in demand, so we want you to take maths. Now, let me quickly put you in perspective. I was not a maths buff by any means. I think I got a C in high school or in matric. And even when I went to the interviews, I said to the guy, the head of maths, I said to him, do you want someone like me to become a maths teacher? And he said, yes, we want people like you. We actually prefer people who don't get A's to become maths teachers because they understand the struggle of not always getting it, not always understanding. And so in my time of being at WITS, I majored in maths, majored in biology, came out of that. Or during my time there, we did teaching pracs. So you do two teaching pracs a year of 3 to 3.5 weeks long. That was a great experience because I got to teach at both primary schools and high schools at different places. So that basically weeds out the people who don't actually want to become teachers. So you don't end up doing 4 years and then finding out, actually, I don't want to become a teacher. A lot of people tend to drop out after the first year because they've now gone into teaching practice and they've realized, hold on, this isn't for me. But by the end of it, and I can proudly say now that I actually love teaching maths and not actually as much teaching natural science. I love learning natural science, but I love teaching maths because I love the challenge and the diversity it brings, because different people understand things from different perspectives. So yeah, it was a 4-year degree and then straight into the real world.
I want to take you back to something you said when I first asked you about what drew you to teaching. And you mentioned that you were considering it at school and your family were concerned because of the potential implications of being a person with a disability going into teaching. How did that impact then on your training? And how has it impacted on your role as a teacher? Tell us if there have been any challenges that you've experienced.
I think that's a good question. So thank you very much for asking. You know, at the time that my family said that, it was a realistic thing because, you know, school wasn't always easy for me. I did get teased. I did get pushed downstairs. I did get ostracized at times. So, you know, thinking about that as a frame of reference, then, you know, going into schools and doing that as a teacher. But when I was studying at WITS, I can honestly say I don't use a wheelchair or anything. So I didn't have any accessibility challenges or accommodation challenges there. I did get given extra time when I wrote my exams. I wrote in a separate room because of my extra time. But apart from that, I didn't get any other different treatment or anything like that. And I didn't see it as a negative or anything like that. I had a good experience. I made good friends. I didn't really have any challenges from that aspect. What I often do when it comes to schools is when I teach, and I started this during my prac, when I started going to schools for prac, and then I continued it when I started teaching. When I first introduced myself, obviously, because my disability is overt and you can see it, and you know it's not something you can hide, nor would I want to, I tell people my story. So, you know, I might need to teach maths, but I'm going to take at least half an hour to an hour to firstly tell them my story and what happened, obviously altering it or adjusting it to the age that I'm teaching. And then opening the floor for discussion and for questions, giving them the floor to say, you know, what any question that you have for me, just ask, because I would rather they ask and know the right answer than sit there and make their own assumptions and, you know, come to the wrong conclusions. So I haven't really had a bad experience in terms of, you know, teasing or anything like that from a school perspective and from a teaching perspective. I think also I teach primary school students mainly, and I tutor high school students. And so I don't think I've had any bad experiences.
Obviously, no, it's not obvious at all, actually. But from your experience, you mentioned that you are not a wheelchair user. How would you feel, because you work as well, you do some work in the accessibility world, and I know you are skilled in that area in more broadly in accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
What would your sense be of the challenges that a person who is living in a wheelchair, is a wheelchair user, or say someone who is blind or partially mm-hmm. blind, what might their experience look like just based on the experience that you have.
Yeah. So again, thinking of university first, most of the places were wheelchair accessible. Sometimes you had to go the long way around to get to, for example, a lecture hall. But I mean, there was a long concourse down the middle, which connected all of the blocks. You could pretty much access the important halls from there. Sometimes you had to go out to come back into the bottom floor. But I'm sure that this is obviously also a while ago, so maybe it's become more accessible since then. Also, I know that they did, when necessary, have a sign language interpreter come with that student if they needed. So I think from a university perspective, they did try to make it as accessible as possible. Then from a schooling or from a work perspective, I think the important thing is being open and honest to what accommodations you may need, and also being open and honest on a constant or continuous basis. I say this because when I went for my interviews, I would say to them, I know that in a teaching role, most men come in smart shoes, long pants, and tucked in shirt, and perhaps a tie, depending on the school. And I make that known that I need to wear tackies or running shoes because I have a fitting in my shoe, and without it, my stamina is halved. So I need to wear those. It does take me a lot longer to tuck in my shirt. So if it's okay if I don't wear a tucked in shirt, and then, you know, if it's a formal, you know, environment or event, I will obviously do so. And then obviously also from a tie perspective, I can't do the tie myself. So if I, on the normal days, don't have to wear a tie, that would be appreciated. And then where necessary, if someone can help me with that. And I've never had a problem with any of the schools that I've worked at. They've been pretty accommodating in that sense, and I've never had any backlash. An interesting thing that happened, and this is why I'm talking from a continuous point of perspective, is I've been working at a school right now for the last 3.5 years. And that conversation about accessibility I had right when I first got hired. And late last year, something happened where because I only have one hand that, you know, functions properly, I had to put my stuff down on the floor to unlock my door. And in doing that, a student came along and literally stood on some of my stuff and broke it. So then I went to them and I said, please, can you install a shelf next to my door so that I can put the things on it when needed, because I need to open my door and I can't put things on the floor. Within the next month, they had put a shelf next to my door so I can put everything down, unlock my door, you know, pick up the stuff from the shelf, and no issues. And that only came about because of my experience and then me sharing, like, hold on, we didn't account for this, but this is something I need. And then they made it happen. So I think that's also something to keep in mind, is you may have challenges, you may have identified them right at the beginning, but also be aware that this can change later on, and you should be open to that.
Let's talk a bit, very briefly, just as a side conversation, about the general accessibility in terms of wheelchair access of the schools that you've taught at. Are they accessible? Would that be a challenge for a teacher and also for students generally?
So the one time I taught at my first school, we had a person who wasn't in a wheelchair but struggled to walk, especially upstairs. And this wasn't a problem when they were young, because you don't move from class to class generally. But as they got older, when they came to grade 4, grade 5, when they started moving from class to class, we actually had to move her teachers from the second or third floor down to the first floor, so that she would be able to access all of the classes without any major hindrance. So in that case, the teachers moved so that she wouldn't have to move as much, especially going up and down the stairs. And that continued until she obviously left the school. However, you know, from a wheelchair perspective, I think some schools are better than others, especially the newer schools. The older schools that, you know, are like, you know, maybe set up from 50 to 100 years ago, don't generally have good accessibility. You know, you've got a ramp from one place to another, but then you meet two stairs or five stairs or, you know, a flight of stairs. And unfortunately, I don't think schooling is that accessible in general, neither for the teachers nor for the students themselves. And I think it is something that we have to work on. My current school that I'm teaching at now, I knew that Nicole was going to visit the school once, and she's in a wheelchair. For those who aren't aware of who Nicole is, she's my business partner and long-term friend. And so I said to the school, she's coming and she needs to get to this one place. Can she actually get there? And we thought about it and we thought she can get three quarters of the way, but then she couldn't get the final way. So we had to actually move the meeting to a place that's more accessible. So she could once again get through a portion of the school, but not all the way through. So yeah, to answer your question, is it fully accessible? No. Is it partially accessible? Yes. Is there room for growth and improvement? Definitely.
Yeah, I think it's something that it's a question that schools probably need to consider, or students and parents need to consider, or people studying to be a teacher or applying to be a teacher would need to consider, in terms of looking for a place that would be accessible to them. It was just interesting to get your perspective, you know, working in the field. Okay, well, let's talk then. We've spoken a bit about the challenges, but as many things in life have, you know, disadvantages, challenges, there are often opportunities as well. Can we talk about what sort of opportunities you've experienced in your life as a teacher? What do you feel your disability offers as an opportunity for you as a teacher?
I think, first of all, the most important thing for me is that disability advocacy / awareness. I think it's so important that, you know, children get exposed to this and see it as an everyday occurrence, not something to be made an issue of. For example, when I explain my disability, I also say what I can and often can't do. So for example, I tell the children, like, plastic sleeves are my arch nemesis. So, you know, and stapling things is quite challenging. So if I ask you to help me put something in a plastic sleeve, or I ask you to staple this for me, you know, it's normal, don't stress. Also explaining that I often carry things in my mouth because I don't have a second hand. And that's normal. So, you know, again, don't freak out if I'm halfway through explaining something and I suddenly put the marker in my mouth to walk to the other side, so I've got a different color to write on the board. And that's become just part of the classroom culture, like an openness and awareness. And I think that's one of the things that it's afforded me, is to help break down those barriers. And I had an awesome experience the other day where a student came to me and said, I had to write an entrance exam to grade 8. And part of that was an unseen, unplanned essay. And she said, the topic that popped in my mind, and she said to me, I don't know why, but the topic that popped up in my mind was accessibility in schools. And she ended up writing an essay about the accessibility in schools and featuring me in that essay and what she'd learned. Unfortunately, I didn't have access to that essay because it was for an application to another high school. But just knowing that that had happened, you know, pinned it down for me that this is something that's important. Even if you don't see all the fruits of your labor, you know that it's happening within their like consciousness, which I think is amazing.
I think, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times, and I think this story particularly highlights it for me, the concept that because your students experience you as a teacher, it normalizes the lived experience of having a disability. And yes, that's kind of an experience that a knowledge that they can take out with them beyond the school where you are into their world perspective. Can we talk a little bit about some of the impacts that you feel that your disability has directly on the way your learners think? And what evidence you've had that is something that is showing up?
Yes.
Beyond that story. Yeah.
So I mean, at my first school, one of the direct things that happened was in line with accommodation, and they had monitor duties, and different children had different duties and rotate these duties. One, for example, would be like recycling duty, another would be assembly duty, and then they made one of the duties Mr. Smith's helper duty. And so two children would come to me first thing in the morning and meet me at my car and say, Mr. Smith, is there anything we can help you with or carry for you to your class? And then they would help me, for example, at my class, they would help me open the door if I needed to, or they would help me put down the chairs or something like that. If I needed any, two-handed help, so to speak, they would help me with that. And then at the end of the day, they would arrive at my door and they would do the same thing. Is there anything we can help you with? And so that was something that I think was important for the school. And I think it was important for the children as well, because they rotated those responsibilities throughout the year. And so different children got that same experience of, this is what he needs help with. This isn't what he needs help with. This is what he can do on his own. Because sometimes they would say, Mrs. Smith, do you need help with that? And I said, no, don't worry, I've got this. And I think that kind of, in some cases, shocked them, because they were like, but, you've got one hand. And I'm like, no, I've got this. It's okay. So I think that was one of the cool experiences. And then also, I think knowing that I have a disability and I've been at a school for a while, taking my new school as an example, I've been there for 3.5 years. We had, I can't remember, it was one of, I think it was a disabled, tennis player with a disability. She visited the school and she spoke about her story and everything. And then I had one or two of the younger children come up to me afterwards and go, oh, she had a disability and you had a disability, but you're not the same, but you're different, but you both have disabilities. And I'm like, yes. So she had different challenges to me. And she's, become a superstar in tennis. And then, I teach you global perspectives, or I teach you math. And they're like, oh, that's so cool. I think that was a cool experience for me as well, because they were starting to draw comparisons and seeing, hold on, like, disability isn't this one blanket. There are some people with disabilities that have these challenges, and there are other people with disabilities that have other challenges. And yes, they're both people with disabilities, but they have different stories, different, challenges, and they can't all be, blanketed the same. So I think that was another cool experience for me.
Do you notice any difference in the perspectives of your learners, or their actions, their behaviors, from the beginning of the year and then towards the end of the year? Is there a shift that you can palpably see?
Yes, especially for the learners that I've taught for the first time. In that first lesson, explaining my disability, explaining what the challenges are and everything, you can see the eyes tend to sometimes be quite wide, and they have 150 questions, and some of them are scared to ask them and others are not. And then by the end of the year, everything is much more relaxed. And, you know, if they do have a question, they come and ask me freely. And, you know, sometimes they'll even be like, you know, how did that scar happen? Which they didn't ask at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. Or knowing that that's a challenge for me, that without me saying anything, at the end of the year, they would be like, okay, Mrs. Smith, can we carry that for you? Mrs. Smith, I see you've got two or three boxes that need carrying to your car. Can I take one for you? So that kind of general awareness of what I can and what I can't do or what I struggle with is now like almost ingrained. And it's not from a perspective of I need a reward. I want to help you. It's more like just I know that I can help you and I have the capabilities of doing so. So, you know, let me do that. And I think just something we haven't touched on is the work environment and the colleagues as well. It's the same there. I recently had the opportunity to go to the, let's call it the preschool, because we have from like grade 000 up to grade 7 at our school. And I went into a class of 4-year-olds. And while I was teaching or talking to the 4-year-olds and telling them my story, you know, they had their own questions and everything. And at the end of it, the teacher came up to me and said, you know what? I never knew that about you. She said, I thought you were like this from birth. And then that opened up a whole communication channel between her and I, in that now she felt like it was safe to ask me other questions. And I think that was really cool. Also, my colleagues that often teach with me are aware of my situation. So they'll, for example, say, like the printing lady will always say, oh, there's a lot of things for you to carry here. Here's a box. And she'll purposely keep a box lid for me on the side and know that if there's a lot of printing for me to carry, she'll put it in the box. Now, I think that's really cool. And then I have another teacher who teaches with me. Or teaches next door to me, and she'll often say, like, I'm going to the kitchen. Do you want me to carry your coffee for you or something like that? Knowing that, you know, sometimes carrying things is an issue, they just fill in the gap automatically. And I think that's really cool.
So it's not just building awareness and normalization of disability amongst the learners, but amongst the teachers and the other staff as well.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Brilliant. So let's talk a little more generally then about teaching and look at what are the skills that you think particularly are important for someone considering becoming a teacher?
Obviously, there's the, you know, studied aspect of it. But apart from that, I think a willingness to be patient and empathetic is key, because you might explain something in one way and the children don't get it. And you're going to have to explain it or repeat yourself, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 times. And if you don't have patience, perhaps teaching is not for you. Because even in your mind, you say, I'm not going to repeat myself. And then in the classroom, there you go, repeating yourself for the 3 or 4, you know, 3rd or 4th time. So I think patience and empathy. As I mentioned earlier, having an ability to see things from different perspectives also will help you. I don't think it's an absolute must, but being able to say, okay, how can I teach this differently? Or how can I explain this differently? And not only from one, you know, one different or one certain perspective, I think that it would be beneficial or helpful. I think also being able to get down to their level, so to speak, or adjust your level to theirs. So, you know, be able to explain things in a simpler way or explain things using colloquial language or try and make it more in line with the thinking that they are thinking. And not, you know, this is a parabola and this is what happens. And as you can see here, this is the turning point. And they sit there and they're like, what the hell is going on? You know, trying to break it down and into a way that they can explain, understand it. I think that's really important as well. And then I think something for me particularly, but I think also for other teachers, if you talk to them, they might agree, is a sense of humor. Because sometimes lessons go right, and sometimes lessons go wrong, and sometimes there are funny moments in your teaching, and you just got to roll with it and be like, you know, that was funny. It happened, you know, even in class, because, I mean, we're human, right? So you make mistakes in front of the students and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm human. No, you know, so you can't take yourself too seriously. I think that's really important.
I think that's an interesting set of skills, because, you know, those are, none of them are particularly subject focused, as it were.
Yeah, agreed.
You know,
and I think that's what you learn on the job. And I think that's the key difference is when you're studying at university, you're studying the subjects, right? You're getting the content knowledge. You are also obviously getting the skills, because they help you explain things and they teach you in that way. Knowing that you're going to become a teacher, they don't say, you know, just do this and get it right. They say, like, make a worksheet or explain this to your team. And so they do kind of practice that. But the real teaching only happens when you go on those pracs, when you step into the classroom, when you're doing your first or 10th or 20th year of teaching. That's where the real experience comes in. And that's where these soft skills are so important.
I was just thinking back to when I was at school. This was before I became blind. And I know that we weren't particularly nice to our some teachers who came in on their pracs. So I am extending a belated, through you, word of apology on behalf of myself, at least, if not my classmates, because I think it is a challenging time, but it's a very important time in a teacher's life. Because I think if you can get through your practicals, it will give you a real taste of the experience of working with children on the ground. I'd like to believe that it probably gets a little bit easier when you're actually a qualified teacher, but maybe that's also an assumption.
No, I would agree with you that it does get easier. I mean, you know, by the time you are doing your fourth year, you're doing your like sixth, maybe seventh prac, depending on if you've done any of your own. And you know by now, I am becoming a teacher. I've studied this. You've already started applying to schools that you want to teach at. So you've got that frame of reference. You've got that thinking in mind, that mindset. And so I think it does get easier. And just to your previous point, on behalf of all other teachers, I accept your apology.
Thank you, Nick. Or should I say, thank you, Mr. Smith? Okay. So, Nick, this has been a fascinating conversation for me. I mean, I considered teaching when I was a lot younger. I never pursued it. But it's been really interesting to kind of take a step back from my perception of teaching and just viewing it through a slightly different lens today. So thank you for offering me that opportunity, and thank you for offering that perspective also to my listeners.
It's an absolute pleasure. As you know, I always love joining all or any of your topics, because I think you're doing an amazing job raising awareness and advocacy. So yeah, it was a great time to be here. Thank you so much.
If people would like to kind of reach out to you about the work you're doing, if they're considering teaching and they themselves live with a disability, are you available for them to do so? And if so, where can they find out more about you?
Absolutely. So I think the easiest would be my speaker name or my alter ego, which is The Rebel Ninja. So they can find out about me at www.therebelninja.com or .co.za. They can also drop me an email, nick@therebelninja.com. .co.za or .com. And then if they are interested more in the disability advocacy side of things, and want to talk to me about that, then it would be nick@smirgos.com, because Smirgos is my disability advocacy company that I run with Nicole.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Then as a final question, what advice would you give to a person with a disability considering the career of teaching?
I would say go into it with your eyes wide open. Go into it for the right reasons. Reflect on it, because teaching isn't always easy. You know, a lot of people in first year drop out because they find out, like, you know, they had this romanticized idea of, I'm going to empower the youth, or I'm going to teach the youth and change their minds. And those people don't even have disabilities. So I think go into it with eyes wide open, think about it carefully, look at your different options and say, like, is this truly a calling for me? If it is, go for it. If you are, you know, interested in a particular topic or subject, go into that, again, knowing that that's your case. When you sign up to become a teacher, look at those subjects and say, these are my passions. Can I, you know, proceed with them? What would I need to study? What would I need to do within the teaching profession to teach those? And take it a step at a time. And also, like I said right at the beginning, when you are studying, look at telling the university what accommodations you need, and can that university accommodate those? And then let's say you qualify, do the same again when you qualify and you go to that first school. Be open about your accommodations that you need and see if that school can actually accommodate. Because if they can, great, stay there. If they can't, unfortunately, you're going to have to look at another place, because you want to teach and be the best person that you can be. And the only way you can do that is through the right accommodations.
Brilliant. Thank you for that very practical advice. Nick, it's been, as always, a real pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for coming and sharing a little bit of your experiences as a maths teacher on A Different Way of Seeing.
It's a pleasure, and I look forward to chatting to you again soon.
Hi, it's Lois again. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Nick Smith. You know, it's sometimes hard to know how to speak to young children about the concept of blindness and disability, inclusion, all of topics like that. And yet those conversations are becoming more important in today's diverse world. If you are looking for a tool to help start those conversations, then I'd encourage you to explore my children's books, The Adventures of Missy Mouse. The books are about a young, blind, adventurous mouse named Missy Mouse who explores the world around her using her other senses. They teach about the way a blind person navigates using a white cane, using the senses as a way to learn about the world and what is happening. And it also normalizes blindness in a way that for some children, they don't otherwise have access to. To find out more, you can hop onto my website, loisstrachan.com, and look at the information on the page about my books. You can also find information about the books on Goodreads, on Amazon, and for those who are members of the Bookshare Library, the books are available there. So, that's The Adventures of Missy Mouse, the four books in the series, all set in a different season. And you'll see that reflected in the weather, Missy's clothing, and some of her activities. Check out my website, loisstrachan.com, or search for the books on Amazon, on Goodreads, or on Bookshare.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.